meeting of the Agriculture Rural Economies Committee together. Welcome, everyone. We'll start. We're going to dig into the budgets now for a few days. And I think what we'll do is have our fiscal analyst, Dr. Mueller. Are you a doctor yet? Or? By the
Mr.
time
Chair,
we get done, we will be.
Maybe. But no, I'm not a doctor.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm just going to briefly hand out two spreadsheets and go over them quickly before we get to the agency budgets, or let the agencies go through their budgets. The first one that's being handed out now is a general fund. It's an overview of the governor's budget just from the general fund perspective for this committee, so which just includes the Department of Ag, the Animal Health Board, and the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute. And what the spreadsheet shows is the first three columns are the current biennium budget. Now, again, this is just general fund. So in the current biennium between the three agencies, we're spending $86.895 million. The next set of columns there, labeled Gov's budget, is what the governor is proposing for these agencies. And I've split the Department of Ag into some of their major divisions. This spreadsheet doesn't show all the particular changes the governor has proposed. We'll go through those when the Department of Ag goes through their budget. And later on, I'll have some more detailed spreadsheets that put, as we put our budget bill together, that shows more of the details. But this is just on the summary level. The governor has proposed, you'll see the column, first column labeled governor minus forecast. The governor is proposing a $10.7 million general fund reduction to the Department of Ag. You'll see most of that, 8.9 of it, is within the ethanol program. And that's a 14.6% reduction in general fund compared to the forecast base. Animal Health Board, the governor's proposed a $510,000 general fund reduction, and that's a 5% cut overall to the board. AURI, the governor has proposed no changes to the base budget for that. For a division total in this funding area of $11.234 million general fund reduction, which is about a 12.6% reduction compared to the base. The Department of Ag also has a couple of fee changes, and some of those drive a little extra money into the general fund, $250,000. So that nets out a little bit more reduction to the general fund of $11.484 million. And then you'll see the same numbers carry over into the next biennium to the tails for fiscal year 14 and 15. Basically, the same cuts happen. All the cuts the governor is proposing are ongoing cuts. So that is the first spreadsheet, and I'll take any questions before I hand out the second one, which shows some of the other changes that are happening with the other funds.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mueller, on the line four item, the ethanol producer payments and programs, now, can you refresh my memory? Weren't those going offline anyway, or is this a reduction beyond what was already reaching the end of its life expectancy?
Mr. Mueller?
Mr. Chairman, yes, and the Department of Ag will probably go through this when they go through their budget too, but what the department is proposing is to pay off all the deficiency payments after fiscal year 12, and then there's still about $15 million of money in the base that could be available for other grant programs, and what the governor is proposing is to take that $15 million down by almost $9 million, so still leaving about $6 million of money for other grant programs.
Money that had been for producer payments that no longer is?
Yes.
Needed?
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Nelson, the department will get
Okay, thank you.
We'll explain that further when we get to that point.
Thank you.
Could we, I just have
Senator Skoy,
Mr. Mueller, what's the date that the last producer payment is made? Did I hear you say 2012?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, yes, at the end of fiscal year 12, at least under the governor's proposal, he would have all the payments be done. He had to bring about $296,000 of payments that would otherwise happen in 2013. He's proposing to get them all done by the end of 2012.
Thank you.
And that's the summary of the general fund. Now is a second spreadsheet. This is to give members sort of a flavor of the spreadsheets that when we get to putting the budget bills together, what they will look like, but they'll be much longer than this. This is sort of a summary level. Now, this shows changes that are happening to all funds. The Department of Ag has a couple of changes that are happening within the Ag Fund. And the way this one's structured, again, the first column is the current biennium spending. Line 8 shows general fund for Department of Ag. Line 9 is a direct appropriation we make from the remediation fund. And line 10 is all other statutory funds, sort of like special revenue funds and ag funds and federal dollars. I roll that up all into one line because when we make appropriation bills later on, we don't specify those amounts. They happen automatically at the department. Below that are change items. Now, these correspond to changes that we'll see in the budget books, and I usually try putting the page number in our budget books that correspond to these change items, and I list them here by fund. And here, as we move on and as we start seeing bills and we put our own bill together, we'll add our own change items, you know, corresponding to the governor's or new ones or different ones depending on what this committee proposes. But you'll see the specific changes proposed by the governor on lines 14 through 18 for the general fund, if you look under the columns Gov's budget. And then there's a couple changes on lines 22 and 23 with the ag fund. And then on lines 20 through 28, for now I'm listing proposals and fundings that are coming from the dedicated funds. And the governor has included proposals for the Clean Water Fund in his budget. But as we move on, I'll take these out because these appropriations will happen in the Environment Committee. But I'm just listing them here now so we can see what the governor has proposed and how that compares to the 2010 and 2011, the money they received from these dedicated funds also. So on lines 33 and 34, you'll see two different totals. One's all funds for the agency on line 33, and then another line 34 is just the general fund total, and that'll tie out to the previous spreadsheet I handed out. And then I have revenue changes listed under that in the gray box, and those are the individual proposals from the governor that changes some of the small fees in their budget. A couple happen within the general fund, and then there are a couple fee changes in, there are three fee changes in the ag fund. And then on the back page, page 2 of this one, our animal health board. Again, there's only one governor change item in that on line 52, and we saw that in the previous spreadsheet. And then AURI. Again, there's no changes in the budget for AURI. And then I have some totals. So this second spreadsheet I handed out we'll see a more detailed one of this later on when we start putting our budget bill together. Right. Because we have to start tracking all the funds. So if there's any questions on this second one, I'll take it. Otherwise, we can probably let the department
go. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Mueller. I think we'll just get the books out, and our friend, Commissioner Bagger Coacher, is here. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner. You have some comments before we get in? You can start right into the discussion here if you wish.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for the invitation to be here, Senator, and hello to each and every one of you. Good to be here again. You should have in your packet something that looks like this, and I think that should be your starter. Some concentric circles pulled together with MDA right in the middle. I just wanted to start by giving you the mission of the Department of Agriculture. Our mission is to enhance Minnesotans' quality of life by ensuring the integrity of our food supply, the health of our environment, and the strength of our agricultural economy. I have that laying on my desk, and I like it because it is generally specific and specifically general in its approach, but it definitely helps us as we go day-to-day at the department. Again, our focus is on food safety, our focus is on the ag economy, and also on environmental protection. Around the edges of that, you see we do all of those things by assisting in expanding global trade. We also focus our attention on clean water as part of the environmental protection portion, and also strengthening rural communities and family farms across Minnesota. Mr. Chairman, you'll be pleased to know that this morning I attended the National Export Initiative. The President is stepping off with the Export Initiative, saying that we want to help farmers, we want to help people all across the country, but we want to start here in Minnesota because of our ag exports specifically, and we're going to do what we can. This is them talking to assist states and local governments and individual farmers and entrepreneurs in building new product, creating new market opportunities, not only here but across the globe. So I spent about 2 hours this morning as they kicked off the National Export Initiative here in Minnesota. And I know that that's an important issue with you, and I want to make sure that you know how committed the Department of Agriculture is in continuing to move forward with that export initiative. If you flip over to the second page, this is a really pictorial description, basically, by graphs as to our expenditures for 2012-2013. The upper chart gives us a picture of our expenditures. 55% would be committed to plant or to protection services. That would be plant protection, pesticides and fertilizer, and dairy foods. Another 12% goes for the operation of the agency. Another 12% goes for value-added products. Another 20% for ag marketing and ag development in our agency. Those two, of course, include the ethanol payment, which would come under the value-added product side. Under the second chart, expenditures by fund, this basically mirrors, or again, a mirror image, our income or our revenue. Our revenue is generated 53% from fee-based or other funds. Federal funds, we're dependent on about 10% of our income and, of course, 10% of our outgo. And from a general fund perspective, we are at about 37% of our total operating budget on a biennial basis comes from the general fund. What I'd like to do, Mr. Chairman, we have with us today all of the division heads. I thought it would be a good opportunity for you to get to know their not only their name. Many of them have been around for several years, although they don't look that old. But I would like to have you have the opportunity to know them just a little bit better. They're going to be here to talk about their individual departments. I'm also going to ask Greta Gauthier, who is our new legislative person, to come up and begin this process. I'd also like to introduce to you our Deputy Commissioner, which is Mr. Jim Borboom, Assistant Commissioner Matt Wollman, and Assistant Commissioner Charlie Poster is also here and will be around just for a little bit of time. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask Greta to come up, and I know time is of the essence. We would start by moving you through this process on a page-by-page basis.
Thank you very, very much, Commissioner, and thanks a lot for coming in yesterday, too, and visiting with me, and our staff about this. Members, we'll just go through this page by page and get a clear understanding.
I think we'll also be prepared to, we are prepared to talk about the ethanol payments and the approach that the governor has taken, and I'm thankful for that. In terms of our own budget, we feel that the governor's approach has been very fair to the Department of Agriculture, and we'll see how that all shakes out at the end of the day. So,
okay.
With that, let me introduce Greta Gauthier.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Chairman, my name is Greta Gauthier. For those of you I haven't met, I'm the new Director of Government Relations at the Department of Agriculture. And today what we thought we would do is try to go through the budget, and we'll start with the change items. We're basically going to take you through the way it is listed on page one of your governor's budget document, the contents page. We'll talk about the change items. You've already had summary somewhat from your own fiscal staff. We can give you more detail on that if you would like. And then we'll go through our program activities and talk about those one by one. If you would be so kind as to turn to the page we handed out that has the three different color charts on it. At the top it says biennial budget change items and has our logo. That's a summary of all of the basic change items the governor is proposing. And right now I'm going to ask Steve Ernest, who is our top fiscal person, a former Senate employee and Senate counsel and research, to come up and walk us through these changes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ernest. How are you today?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Steve Ernest, Finance and Budget Director at the Department of Agriculture. Mr. Chairman, this summary sheet is in the order that the change items are presented in the book, and it's also arranged by fund. So the first group is the Clean Water Fund items. This money comes from the constitutionally dedicated tax for specified purposes in the Constitution, and these projects are discussed and agreed on with an interagency group of people who work in these clean water activity areas. Our agency has four items from this fund. The first one is the Ag Best Management Practices Loan Program. This is to make loans to rural infrastructure, mostly agricultural, and specifically targeted to achieving the total maximum daily load plans that's developed. It's a revolving fund, so the money comes back and gets reloaned out. The Clean Water Protection Program, Pesticide Monitoring Assessment, and Research and Evaluation are programs that our protection program, specifically Pesticide and Fertilizer Division, work on. And we started these programs 2 years ago. All these appropriations are basically continuations of activities we've started to, add work on top of what we already can do with our existing budgets in these areas. And I think after we get finished with the summary, we'll go through the specific pages in case you have specific questions on each item. The next group is the general fund. Of course, this is, as the chart showed, this is about 37% of our budget comes from the general fund. And of that, about a third is for the ethanol/agri programs. Our total cuts in this area are $10.974 million. This number differs a little from the charts Mr. Mueller handed out just because this takes into account the revenues also. I'm showing in some items where we have revenue affected, and he had them on the bottom of his charts, but they do agree. Our first big change item, which was already asked about, is the bioenergy ethanol value-added program. The goal here is to pay off the final deficiency payments. Deficiency payments are amounts that we calculated based on the years past where we did not pay 20 cents per gallon because of shortfalls in the general fund. So we calculated those numbers and set them aside for those plants and said, as we are able to, we will pay you those amounts that we would have paid you if we had paid the full 20 cents as the statute prescribed. So this would provide $15 million the first year and make all those final payments. There are 9 ethanol plants that still have deficiencies that we have calculated for them. And then in the second year, it would be about a 30% cut to this activity. Or overall for the biennium, it's about a 30% cut to the activity. And then we would start into some of the more progressive, newer rural infrastructure programs that the Agri statute prescribes. There are a variety of options, and we can. Next gen energy is the next natural step for the ethanol bioenergy activities. The agency operating reductions, this is a 5% cut to our operations, so the non-ethanol and non-grants part. And when we get to that item, we can present some more specifics. The retail food handler fee increase, this is an across-the-board 15% increase to these fees. These fees go into the general fund. Food protection is a general fund-supported activity, and we bring in about $3 million to the general fund every year for that activity. This would be to bring in a little more and appropriate it to us so that we can hire 2 to 4 new FTEs. We have some facilities that we are not able to inspect as frequently as we should, and the complexity of the inspections is increasing also. So with a 15% increase, we can get maybe 3 or 4 more people out there and work on that. And then the wholesale produce dealer's fee dedication, this is a fee that's currently going into the general fund, and then we use our general fund appropriation to operate the program. It does seem like the kind of activity where it matches what we have in other areas in our agricultural fund, our dedicated fees. So this would just be to reduce our appropriation by the amount the revenues come in, put them into the agricultural fund, and then have them appropriated to us out of there. So it's just moving them to be dedicated. That way we can better keep track of revenues and expenditures and matching them up. So the changes to the general fund, like I said, total $10.974 million for the biennium. And then the agricultural fund is our fee-dedicated account. And we have three changes in here. The first one is just the flip side of the last item I said in the general fund, which is putting it into the agricultural fund and having it expended out of there. Second one is fixing, sort of realigning our restructuring of the ag chemical response and reimbursement account surcharge. In 2009, the way the fee was charged was changed, so it's charged at the dealer level, a more local level, more smaller amounts come to us. But the statute still had a minimum $10 amount, where if you owed less than $10, you didn't have to pay it. That creates a lot of work for us to track those. So thing with the new structure, we just decided it would be better to just eliminate the minimum and the fee is what it is. Just simplify it and just apply it across the board. And then our anhydrous ammonia inspection program change item is to initiate a new approach for inspection of anhydrous ammonia activities, and this would be giving the people who regularly pass their inspections with no problems a lower fee. So it would be a more risk-based or problem-based approach to that fee. And Mr. Chairman,
any questions on that page? We'll get into more details here as we go here. They'll all be explained into the budget here books. Senator Skoy.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this isn't a question, but when you guys are redoing this anhydrous ammonia inspection program, I wonder if you wouldn't be wise to coordinate with the Highway Patrol, because they have started doing more thorough inspections of beyond just brakes and lights on anhydrous ammonia. Maybe some of that ought to be coordinated because there's certainly duplication going on, and we don't need both government agencies coming around inspecting these tanks. Just something to work on when you're redoing this.
Okay.
Mr. Chair. Thank you,
Senator
Mr.
Rosen. Senator Rosen.
Yes, I did have a question, Mr. Chair, and it was on the bioenergy and agri-value added program. And it says in the book here on your change item that there is.
We're going to get to the book here, Senator.
A little more detail on that one.
We'll get into more detail
okay.
as we go
Thank
to
you,
the
Mr.
book
Chair.
Page by page. So maybe your question will get answered. I want to make sure the Energy Commission Chairman is on our side on this stuff. So. Might be able to fill in some spots. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, would you, we would like to, if that works, go through the a couple more spreadsheets. Primarily the agency overview. Pages 6 and 7 in the governor's budget.
Good idea.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm going to have Mr. Ernest take us from here.
Mr. Chairman, this document is a little bit confusing sometimes to read, so I thought I would just walk through how these look. There are numbers pages for each program, and then within each program for each activity, or what we have as, generally speaking, as divisions. On page 6, the top part is showing the direct appropriation. So this would be the amounts that would appear as riders or direct numbers in the main part of your budget bill. They are renewed every year. They're not in statute at all. So you see on the first line there, it shows the current appropriation, and it just carries the fiscal 11 number forward. That's not the same thing as the base, but it's a good reference point just to see where it's coming. So that says a 10% cut if you compare to current funding. What the big difference between current funding and the base is in the ethanol program, where the cuts were designed as one-time cuts. There was over $5 million a year cut, and the plan in the law approved by the legislature and the governor was that those cuts would go back. So the base includes the $5 million a year. And so if you cut from the base, it's the 15% we've been talking about. So that's the difference there. And then the bottom part of the page shows expenditures, and there's just a slight difference in here between expenditure and appropriation. The general fund number on the top is $62,914,000, and on the bottom, $62,354,000. And the difference is because there's a little of that money that we don't spend, we transfer out. We transfer $186,000 a year. It's a rider in the bill. It has been for years. From the general fund into the Minnesota Grown account in the Ag Fund. That's to help with the fees that are paid for using the Minnesota Grown label and advertising in our book. And so the general fund really helps that program out, but we move it into that fund. And then there's $94,000 a year that we transfer to MinSCU for their rural mental health program. That's also been in the budget for years. So that's a difference you might see there. And the other direct appropriations we'll see in the pages also, but the remediation fund direct appropriation of $388,000 a year, the remediation fund is managed by the Pollution Control Agency, but that is our direct appropriation for managing our ag chemical cleanup activities. And there also below on the expenditures is an open appropriation from the remediation of fund of $2 million a year. That's the actual cleanup dollars for those polluted sites. That's agreed on with the multiple agencies. It's the Department of Agriculture, DNR, and Pollution Control Agency, who are jointly appropriated the money in that account, and they agree who should get how much to clean up the sites that need to be cleaned up with that.
Superfund money.
It's also called Minnesota Superfund or MRLA. And then you'll see the main appropriations are statutorily appropriated. So if you make changes in the bill, you may change some statutes, but if you don't change the statutes, these are appropriated to us. And the biggest one, obviously, is our fee account, our agricultural fund with $49 million for the biennium. And then about $8 million from the feds each year we anticipate, if things come through as we anticipate they will.
And those, Mr. Ernst, are those matching funds somewhat for fee inspections or regulatory activities, or are those federal funds, sir?
Mr. Chairman, there's a summary of the federal funds at the end of the book, and it starts on page 60, and each program, I think we've accurately listed whether it requires a match or not.
Okay.
Some of them do, some of them don't.
Well, we just want to make sure that we watch the matches and make sure we have adequate funding. All of us are watching this in all of our committees, but make sure we have access to, resources there to access those. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
And then on page 7, just briefly, they break down that spending number, the $173.42, for all the funds by some of the main categories of our spending, our compensation for people, other operating, that's probably mostly the ethanol in there. And some local assistance.
And rent.
Yes. This is a way I'm not used to looking at it, but this combines our spending codes into general categories. That may or may not be helpful to you. And then the bottom part just summarizes which of our programs get the money. So as the graph said, 55% is in protection services, 12% is in value added, and so forth, 20% in promotion and marketing.
Okay. And the full-time equivalents looks like you're holding about steady then.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, about steady. The biggest change in that is from our new clean water money. We got some people last year. We would continue with those people this year. It's about 12, I believe, if that money comes to us again.
So the 5% reduction in the agency is not going to be reflected too much in employees then, as I read it then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, there are some positions eliminated in the 5%, and a large amount of the 5% is from salary savings from the early retirement incentive. So people who have retired were filling their positions at lower levels.
Okay. Any questions at this time for Mr. Ernst? You're going to stick around for a while?
Yep.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Chairman, if it is all right with the committee, at this point we are at the beginning of our the page-by-page detail portion. So I'm on page 11, or excuse me, 10. My document got copied backwards here. Sorry. And these items coming up on these pages are our clean water projects. Again, that money comes from the sales tax that was enacted with constitutional amendment in 2008. So if you would like us to give you more detail on this, I know you did say, Mr. Chairman, that these projects would eventually go over to a different committee, but we will be happy to go into detail if you'd like to have some detail on those. Not so much the budget. These are not general fund items. These are the land and legacy clean water money.
I think we should have it explained because we are, just for the committee's information, we are going to have a clean, we are going to have a water day or...
Very good, Mr. Chairman.
We're thinking some more catchy names for it, but we are going to have at least one day where we tell agriculture's story.
Absolutely.
It appears like if we don't, nobody else wants to, so we kind of get painted with a bad stick once in a while here. So
we're happy to help tell that story, sir. Mr. Chairman. If it's okay with you, Mr. Chairman, we're going to bring up Mr. Greg Buzicki. And just to give some of the newer members background, Mr. Buzicki is a born and raised Minnesotan and a graduate of the University of Minnesota, and his degrees, 2 degrees, were in soils. And he is in charge of our pesticide and fertilizer program, but it is also his branch of our agency that's looking over these water quality, clean water issues. So I'll let him walk you through those budget pages.
Welcome, Mr. Buzicki. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing well, Mr. Good. Chair. Thank you. Good. Thank you, and committee members. For the record, my name is Greg Buzicki. I am the division director of the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division at the department. I am here to help explain some of the next 4 pages on clean water dollars that comes to the department. The first on page 10, you'll see a clean water agricultural best management loan program. And for some of the members that have been here for some time, you're very familiar with this, I'm sure. And as Mr. Ernest spoke, this is a revolving fund. It has a corpus, I believe, of about $64 million. And historically, it has been used as a way to provide low-interest loans at about 3% to growers and businesses who are interested in implementing some of these best management practices, or BMPs, as we commonly call them. You might be familiar with such terms as minimum tillage, for example, or putting in waterways or helping out with the sewage treatment systems. These monies are used not only for agriculture, but they can also be used for residences. The difference here with the clean water money is that this money is used in areas where there are currently impairments, so there's watersheds that are currently impaired, and the money is all of the money is kind of a partnership between state, local, and industry folks, so that the money is provided to a bank that actually issues the loan. Once the loan and the financial aspects have been approved by the bank, and then also the practice has to be approved by a local entity, such as a Soil and Water Conservation District. So if it's past those two bars, the dollars are provided for. And as I said, these dollars here coming from the clean water are focused only on areas where there actually is an impairment. So it's targeted dollars to help for practices in areas of watersheds where there is a impairment through the MPCA's program. And Mr. Chair, that's kind of the general note. I should mention that in the previous years, 2001, there was $2.1 million put into this program through the Legacy Act. In 08 and 09, there was $1.5 million. Last biennium, there was $4.5 million. The request this year is as you see it, and the idea is to actually build this I have been told that there is more requests than there are dollars available. So that's the purpose of asking for more dollars in this program area.
And how much, again, are you asking? Are you going to be asking for, you thinking?
Mr. Chairman, in FY12, it's $3.625 million, and in FY13, it's $5.625. My math is failing me. I can't add that up.
Oh, that's fine.
I don't have the biennial number. Mr. Chair, if the committee would turn to page 11. As has been explained, the Department of Agriculture works cooperatively with the other state agencies that are involved in this program. So These dollars and programs have been negotiated out, so there is a coordination among the state agencies. We have actually four areas. I've just explained one. The next is in the drinking water protection area. And in this particular area, we're asking for $850,000 each year of the biennium. And the purpose of that, of those dollars, is to support our work dealing with groundwater protection, specifically and most importantly, nitrates. We've certainly heard a lot about nitrates in recent weeks through the media. It is a serious concern. There are communities and private wells that do have high nitrate levels or concerns about nitrates, and I'm sure you'll be hearing more about that when you talk about water resource in the hearing that's coming up. But just briefly, what we're responsible for is developing best management practices for fertilizer nitrogen, promoting those practices. A part of these dollars are also going to be used working with local units of government and cities that have nitrate concerns. We have a number of communities around the state where there's actually nitrate problems where we come in and work as the technical experts with the city, with growers, with landowners to try to understand what's taking place and improve the situation. We're also doing a lot of locally driven projects such as developing a private drinking water well network to monitor nitrate trends in the sandy soils of central Minnesota, working on specific projects with local units of government and private entities to explore best management practices, irrigation practices, and better understand what problems, what the sources of the problems are. And, Mr. Chair, you'll be hearing quite a bit more about our work later. Mr. Chair and committee members, on page 12, we have a brief explanation of what we're doing on pesticide monitoring and assessment. The Department of Agriculture has been monitoring groundwater and surface water since the mid-1980s and early 1990s, respectively. The dollars here were put forward for us to purchase some additional equipment, which allows us to explore concentrations of pesticides and their degradants at very low levels. Very simply, instead of looking at the, and forgive me, we're going to use a little some technical stuff here, instead of looking at the part per billion area, which we've been looking at for many years, this equipment allows us to get down to the parts per trillion level, or 1,000 times lower. This allows us to be able to detect at an early warning level these concentrations and understand what's taking place. And in addition, we're able to look for, instead of 40 different materials, we look for 100 using this new equipment. As part of this purchase, we are running 600 more pesticide samples each year. So this money went to buying the equipment and the resources to be able to look lower, look more frequently, and look at more compounds. So it does augment our current program, but greatly strengthens it. Mr. Chair, on page 13 is the fourth and final component. Again, you will be hearing a great deal of information about this research, but I must say that in my time here working on agriculture and environmental issues, this is perhaps perhaps the most exciting time that we've had. We do have a lot of outstanding projects in the field. These are dollars that were not available for us to understand exactly what is causing very specific problems and target best management practices and our limited resources so that we can resolve these issues. There's quite a few projects that have gone out for RFP, request for proposal, so it's a very public process, and we've done a number of rounds. In FY11, we had $1.25 million that went out for research projects. I believe there were about 9 projects that were awarded, and we're asking to increase that because the need is certainly there. So, Mr. Chair, those are the four pages that specifically deal with the clean water dollars And if you have any questions, you're the members, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
And Mr. Bezicki, on page 13, those funds that supports the Discovery Farms, is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Could you tell us a little bit about that, just brief? We'll get into that more later on, but I just want the members to know a little bit about the Discovery Farms, if you could.
I'd be pleased to. The Discovery Farms program in Minnesota is actually modeled after a successful program like this in Wisconsin, which has been successfully operating for 8 or 9 years now. Basically, what we are doing under this, with these dollars, is providing technical support to a grassroots organization and coalition of Minnesota farmers and farm organizations, commodity organizations that have gotten together, put in their own resources into trying to figure out exactly at a local level, at a farm level, what is taking place under our current practices. And then as the growers, not the university researchers, but the growers themselves decide to make changes, those changes are monitored and evaluated. And so there's about a half a dozen of these around the state. There'll be more. And our role specifically in this is to provide the technical expertise to make sure that the monitoring stations are put in correctly, that they have the technical expertise to augment what they already have, and to serve as, if you will, a neutral third party to make sure that the science is good science. So it's above reproach. It's really an exciting thing, and I can't wait for the members to hear the big story.
We're going to do that as part of the real Minnesota Farmer Day, or days, depending on how long we need to take with it. But somebody's got to tell our story. That's a good part.
Mr. Chair and committee members, when you hear some of these growers who are taking the initiative to get involved in this, you're going to be extremely impressed. There are some real leaders out there.
Senator Kubley, did you have a question?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Bezicki. I guess I couldn't help but wonder when you're talking about parts per trillion, is there any data out there that measures impact on human health or, those kinds of issues in something that small?
Mr. Bezicki?
Mr. Chair, Senator Kubley, some of this information at parts per trillion, I would have to say that I'm not familiar offhand with impacts at that level, but there are both environmental standards and there are human health standards that are higher than that. So our ability to be able to look at lower levels and to find it and to monitor any changes will be of some help. The other thing, Mr. Chair and Senator Kubley, that's happening is there's a growing focus on something called endocrine disruptors and emergent contaminants. And so our ability to get at these low levels will put us ahead of the game as opposed to responding if we do actually find that there are important health effects at that level. And Mr. Chair, committee members, one final thing. Sometimes you like to be on the cutting edge, and sometimes you like to be just a little bit behind. We're on the cutting edge, but we're also a little bit behind. The USGS has actually been doing this kind of work for some time. So we now have the capability to look at where some of the other folks have been able to look. It's not widespread, but in very short order, more of the monitoring will go this way.
So, Mr. Chair...
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Bezicki. So would something like bisphenol A be an example of something that is in those small quantities?
Mr. Chair, Senator Kubley, I'm only somewhat familiar with bisphenol A, and I believe so. I believe we are looking at very low levels, but I'm not quite sure they get down to the parts per trillion. I could get that information from some of the other agency folks who are experts. It's not a pesticide, so I'm not all that familiar with it.
No, Mr. Chair, Mr. Bezicki, it's an endocrine disruptor. Right. That's why I asked, since you had mentioned that.
Ms. Gothier, do you have a...
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just wanted to add about this ability to perceive these very small amounts. You kind of can think of it as like an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. We can detect these problems so much sooner and can help address them, bring people into compliance, avoid a lot of other unnecessary work if we're able to see these things coming down the road. And then the other thing I'd like to say, just in general about all these clean water projects, is that to reiterate that there is an interagency group that got together and packaged a number of proposals that fit the purposes of the Clean Water Land and Legacy Statute. And then what the agencies really tried to do, what we did do, is each agency really focusing on what we do best, what we do uniquely, so that there is no overlap. There's not. We're trying to make this as streamlined and efficient as possible. And we believe it's a very good package. It was actually put together under the previous administration and handed over when the transition occurred, and remains virtually as you see it today. So just to give that little backstory on the how the clean water stuff came to be. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Bezicki, on the page 13, the clean water research and evaluation, just for the record, the funding for the academic research or any of the research teams, is that going to be funded for just Minnesota research, and will the dollars stay in Minnesota?
Mr.
Or will
Bezicki?
You be using these dollars to fund projects that are outside of the state with the results coming back into the state?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, I know that none of the projects have been funded none of the projects that have been funded are from outside of the state. I would have to actually check to make sure that there's something in the contract or the RFP. I believe all the money stays within the state boundaries.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bezicki, I would appreciate that. And yeah. Also, besides the Discovery Farm concept, I would assume that the dollars will go to the University of Minnesota. Is that right? Or is there any other research capacity that can handle this type of...
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, I'd be happy to double-check on that. And the request for proposal is open for anyone to provide a proposal. We have funded entities from, I believe, Mankato State, Winona State. Most of the dollars go to the university, but other projects have been awarded, I believe, and there have even been other entities such as consultants that will come in and offer proposals to do certain things. So it actually does get spread around because there are certain things that the University of Minnesota, my alma mater, may not have the best capability, the best project. And we could bring a list of the projects in so you could see what's been awarded.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair,
Senator
Mr. Bezicki, I think my line of reasoning and questioning here is because we want to make sure that there's some accountability, there's some best practices, and the tail end of this, what is the output and what are we getting for our dollars? So if you could track, I'm not saying that we need a formal report perhaps, but just coming back to this committee to say where those dollars are going, what is the research, what have they, is there overlapping on some of this research, are they using best practices, is it being implemented? Accountability is what I'm looking for, Mr. Bezicki, with the dollars.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, and you'll hear more about this in our proposal, but we've paid a great deal of attention to that. So before the actual priorities of the projects are determined, we actually go out and talk with we listen to what different folks in agriculture think that they need, and we develop a priority list and so forth. But when the projects come in by contract, they have to report to us on a quarterly basis. That's how they get billed. So there's actually reports that come into us on a quarterly basis, and they are paid only if they meet those criteria, because we full well know that the legislature is watching these dollars very closely. These are very important dollars, and we want nothing to go wrong. The folks who will be coming in and testifying would be, make sure that they talk about the proposal for the committee.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Buzicki, that's the problem. I don't know if we've watched all of our dollars as closely as we have. And I certainly believe in you guys and what the department's doing. It's just that there has been some discrepancies in some dollars that have been used in other areas that we need more accountability and an answer to.
I understand. And Mr. Chair and Senator Rosen, we're paying a great deal of attention to that. We'll be happy to speak to that next time we're here.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Good questions, Senator. Okay. Who's going to do the value added now?
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Bezzetti.
All right. So, Mr. Chairman, we move on now to some of our general fund changes. Are the next section of the governor's package before you? And on page 14, you have the bioenergy and agricultural growth research and innovation value-added programs. And Mr. Ernest is going to speak to this, but I also ask that the packet that we gave you on the last page was a multicolor bar graph related to the ethanol. And this shows you the same numbers again in a different way to let you kind of understand. Overall, Mr. Chairman, the governor's proposal, again, is to pay off those deficiency payments to ethanol producers. They are owed that money. It is the state's obligation. He says, let's pay them off, be done with it. And then the money that remains, which you see on this this chart, would be intended for the uses of agri, which are right now next gen, biodiesel, and the livestock initiatives. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Ernest to go with more detail, sir, Mr. Chairman.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just to sort of give you the brief history again, the plants that qualified for this were qualified for up to 10 years of up to $3 million a year, 20 cents per gallon. In fiscal 2003, there was an allotment, and then the following bienniums, fiscal 4, 5, 6, 7, the law was written to specifically pay them 13 cents per gallon instead of the 20 cents per gallon, with the instructions that we should keep track of how much they would have gotten. And then if we get money appropriated to us, we would make those deficiency payments. So you can see here how much we did get appropriated to us since fiscal year 2008. And on June, any production that was made after June 30th, 2010 was no longer eligible for the program, but in the meantime, we had money to, after paying the regular 20 cent per gallon production payments, start paying those deficiencies in fiscal 9, in fiscal 10. It was most of the money, and this current year, all the money was sent out in deficiencies prorated to the plants that qualify. If a plant stops production, or isn't producing on a commercial scale anymore, or isn't producing at the same location, or isn't owned by qualified ownership anymore, then they fall out of eligibility for getting these deficiency payments. But right now we're saying as many as 9 plants still have numbers on the books that they could qualify for $15 million, and we should pay that off and be done with it.
And Mr. Ernst, would you get me a copy of the of those plants and what monies they have coming?
Yes.
Rest of the members, Senator Rosen, you certainly want mm-hmm. that as chair of the Energy Committee. So, yeah, we'll just get it. We'll get a copy to us, and we'll get them out to the committee then and before the next next meeting. And I would point out too, as you look at this, handout here. 2010 and 11, you see the number, roughly a little over about $9.5 million or so. And then, as I understand it, the governor's proposal is to pay out the full 15 now, because those years we were short of money also, and we decided to extend the deficiency payments. And for 2010, 2011, we couldn't make the payments that were due, so we extended it on. And now the governor's proposal is to pay it all off in 2012, And then the 2013 numbers you see would be monies that we would be able to possibly keep for other areas.
That's correct. Is that
yes, Mr. Chairman, that's
third
correct.
Of the committee then? So, Carla?
I just have a question, Mr.
Sure.
Chair. It's just a, if we made these, if the reason we have deficiency payments is because we didn't have enough money
right.
in those years.
Right.
I think that just begs the question then, in this year of having the biggest budget deficit we've ever had, why are they all being, why are those deficiency payments all being lumped into this 1 year?
Well,
and maybe that's not a conversation for right now, but I know that's a question I have following our discussion here today.
Well, Senator Nelson, and for those of us who were there in 2003, the last historic budget crisis.
I was, by the way.
And you were.
Yeah.
And the agreement we came up with was that, hey, we just can't make the payment, that the amount of the payment that is scheduled to be paid in the contract we made with you, in the agreement we made with you. But if you would support us extending the time out, hence the phrase deficiency payments, extend them out instead of being paid for the 10-year period, you would be paid for 11, 12, or 13 years. And they spread them over time and so reduce that payment. That was in 2003. We were set to get those paid out the last 2 years here. But again, we had some budget shortfalls, and in 2009 decided to reduce the deficiency payments even more till we get to this point. And I think in the governor's position, he wants to pay those out the first year, and that's why you see, and we're clicking along about $9.5 million here, and that would have been paid out over the next 2 years for the most part, but he wants to pay it out in the first year and get it out. It's a commitment we've made. We've delayed it a couple times already. I believe in the governor's view, he wants to get it paid out and get it done.
So, Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Nelson.
So it's not, it's just, it's still in the same biennium. It's just paying it
right.
all at the first year of
right.
the biennium instead
yes.
of over the 2 years
right.
of the biennium. That's
right.
the piece I needed. Thank
yeah.
you.
Okay. Is that a fair assessment, Commissioner and Mr. Ernst?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
I don't want to speak for the governor, but I
no, that's
I
exactly
read it.
Right.
Yeah.
The first year of the biennium would include 14, I think, 0.7. The second year, about $300,000. He's basically saying, and this is the end of it. It's
yeah.
over then once this payment is made because it meets the deficiency of 7 cents a gallon. You made 13 cents. The obligation was for 7. And I think it has something to do with the, you know, being Minnesotan. We made this promise, and by golly, we're going to stick to it. And so this is the governor's recommendation. Obviously, this is going to be your decision at the end of the day.
Just one comment, Mr. Chair.
So
I'm not suggesting we don't keep our promises. I just needed to know why it was
yeah.
all front-loaded.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, and that's a story that we need. That we'll have to get out, and as we go through the budget battles here in this place, And Ms. Goth here.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One other point that goes along with that is that the idea is that once these are paid off and our commitment, our promise is kept, then we would like to look to the new energy economy and try to do our part in moving Minnesota into that with next generation biofuels and have that money available. And there is, of course, a next generation board that legislators and agency heads sit on to discuss those issues and decide how to proceed. Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you. any further questions on the value-added portion?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Kubley.
Well, I think maybe Mr. Knopf knows, but wasn't 2012 the year that we would have made the final payment under the original schedule?
No. Well, go ahead, Greg. Mr. Knopf. It would have been before that. But.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Senator Cooley, if you look at the reductions that happened in fiscal year 2010 and 2011, had those reductions in this program not occurred, it would have been paid off probably by the – there might have been some that, would, if you look at the numbers here, it might have floated over into 2012 a little bit, but it wouldn't have taken all of the money in 2012.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that, we'll move on to page 15, which is our internal agency cuts. And to speak to that, I'm going to bring up Assistant Commissioner, or excuse me, Deputy Commissioner Jim Borbom. And for the, Mr. Chairman, for those of you who don't know, Jim was at one time a member of the esteemed Minnesota Legislature, but in the other house.
And representing Southwestern Minnesota.
Yeah.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Jim Borbom, Deputy Commissioner with Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I'm happy to talk about the agency operating reductions, which is shown on page 15 of your budget summary. The governor's recommendation is a reduction of $1,016,000. The largest part of that reduction will essentially come from savings or the merger or the consolidation of two divisions within our agency, one division being the Agriculture Marketing Service Division, the other one being the Ag, Agriculture Development, and Financial Assistance Division. Part of this merger would be, again, the merger of these two divisions, but also the shift or the move of one of the programs that's currently under the Ag Development and Financial Assistance. That program is known as the Minnesota Rural Finance Authority. That will move under the administrative oversight of Steve Ernest in our Budget and Finance Division. The benefit of this consolidation is that we're actually able to vacate some office space in our building. We pay a very high premium for the lease costs on the building, which is owned by the St. Paul Port Authority. And by consolidating staff and moving staff into some other areas within the building, we can vacate office space and turn that over to another agency, another entity, and realize a significant cost savings. The other part of that is some departure of two division directors. One director opted for an early retirement option, and another one we did issue a layoff notice, which is a difficult task to do. But I think in the end, it's actually the right decision in order to preserve the program responsibilities and the talent of our staff and to realize the savings. Another part of this effort or the savings that's in the governor's recommendation is some early retirement savings that we have about 24 employees within our agency that are taking the early retirement option. About 16 or 17 of those are pointed to some part or partially general fund monies. Out of those, there are about six employees that are not going to be refilled or rehired, so we're able to capture some salary savings due to the fact that we're not going to replace or refill. And then there is some program efficiencies that we're going to look back into the regulatory side of the agency. So, Mr. Chairman, members, that's largely how we're achieving the $1,016,000 per year that's in the governor's recommendation.
Just a question I had on, as long as Mr. Ernst is here, on the RFA. Do we have adequate resources in there to admit it, to run the program and satisfy the needs of the program?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the RFA's loans are primarily funded from bond state general obligation bonds, which are repaid by the loan repayments. And we are in the beginning of our most recent appropriation, so I think that it's estimated that that will get us through a couple years. Mr. Borbom could speak to that as well.
Yeah, but Mr. Chairman, the last bond authorization, I believe, was $30 million, and we're just starting to draw onto that allocation. The Department of Minnesota Management and Budget, formerly known as Department of Finance, sells the bonds. We size the sale of the bond based on the level of loan activity. Part of my responsibility, Mr. Chairman, will be to pick up some of the workload with the Rural Finance Authority, working with Steve. I'll be shifting some of my workload to the two assistant commissioners that were here, so it gives me the capacity to work with the Rural Finance Authority, and that's actually where I began my employment with the agency 15 years ago.
And one more question about the RFA is: are you seeing the program being used? Is it? Are you seeing more applications to use the beginning programs and in other parts of the program, or over time? How's this trend showing? Is it?
Mr. Chairman, members, the trend, quite honestly, we've seen an increase in the restructured two loan program, which is, I think, largely driven by some of the hardship in the dairy industry and the pork industry. We've seen some increases there. We've seen some decline in the beginning farmer loan program just because land values have continued to escalate, and that's a challenge or a barrier for beginning farmers.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of concern out there about the age of the farmers, but I don't know. We'll have to see if we can think of some ways to help support some new people coming in. It'd be a good idea. But.
Mr. Chairman, that we're very concerned about that also, and want to find ways for young people to stay on the farm and in their in the area of the state where they are from.
Thank you.
And one more point, Mr. Chairman.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just for the members of the committee that are new, we actually partner with about 400 participating lenders throughout the state of Minnesota. They're system banks, community banks, independent banks, farm credit system. We partner with a lot of those entities. We also have a partnership with a farm service agency. And so the way the program works is that the Rural Finance Authority buys 45% of a loan amount, and then the bank retains the other 55%. That's where that FSA can help support that other 55% retained by the lender. But there's a lot of partnerships in building these programs. And you know, your point is well taken. The barriers that beginning farmers face is, again, increasing land values.
Okay.
With that, Mr. Chairman, if there are no other questions, we'd like to move on to the retail food handler fee increase, which is detailed on page 16 of the governor's budget document. And to help explain that, I would ask that you welcome Dr. Heidi Kassenborg, who is head of our dairy and food inspection division in our department. And she actually is also a native Minnesotan, grew up on a potato farm in the Red River Valley. And she's a veterinarian, too, so we get to put her to work in a number of different ways and use all of her talents to our best, hopefully the best ends. And she can talk to you about how this is going to roll out.
Welcome to the committee again, Dr. Kassenborg.
Just want to let people get to know who we are, sir, Mr. Chair.
Well, we know there's hope for those potato folks, then.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dr. Heidi Kassenborg, and I'm the division director for the Dairy and Food Inspection Division at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And this portion of today's meeting, or this hearing, is I'm going to talk about our proposed increase in retail food handler fees. When we talk about retail food handler fees, or what a retail food handler is, what we mean by that is our grocery stores, primarily grocery stores, convenience stores, and those areas where the consumer purchases food to make their own food item. The reason for this is we've got a couple reasons why we think that this would be is a necessary increase. Right now, we are delinquent on the frequency of inspections that we should be doing, particularly for our high-risk facilities. What we mean by high risk, we categorize them into three areas: high, medium, and low. Low would be mostly your convenience stores, but high risk is an area where ready-to-eat food is produced or sold, and primarily, in your experience, it would be mostly delis within grocery stores. Those are considered high risk. There's issues with a certain pathogen called listeria, for example. And so we're behind on that. We have not had a fee increase since 2003, and we are faced with an increasing complexity of our food supply, and so this has more and more demands on our inspectors and our inspection staff. And now really small food safety mistakes can have some really big consequences, as we've seen in several large-scale outbreaks that we've been associated with, that we've helped find the source of, such as the peanut butter outbreak that happened years ago. And in the past, simply instead of looking at the sanitation of a facility, what we're doing now really is looking at the system of food safety that these establishments have in place, so that when we're not there, we can be assured that they have a system in place that will keep the food safe and that they're following that system. And our cost of our current license inspection fees, we actually, like I said, we haven't increased our fees since 2003. And actually, if we look at other agencies that do similar types of inspections within the metro area, we are, for the most part, other local agencies, most of our fee categories are a lot less than those particular agencies. And what would we buy with this particular fee increase? Well, we're hoping to get if this fee increase is approved, we would hire some more inspection staff to conduct those inspections. What is this a benefit to the consumer? What does that actually buy for the consumer, not just what we're going to purchase with that money? Well, what it does is it helps us fulfill our mission of ensuring the integrity of the food supply. And that's important not just for the health, the public health of our citizens, taxpayers, but also for the companies that sell food products both here in other states and in other countries. Because we really need to maintain the consumer confidence in our product. And so if we're able to prevent foodborne illness incidents, and if unfortunately they should happen, that we're able to jump on those and detect and respond to those quickly, that helps maintain the consumer's confidence.
And how often are you required to inspect these facilities? Does it vary with the type of facility?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, the answer to that question is yes. We categorize them into three layers: high, medium, and low. High is every year, medium is 18 months, and low risk is every 2 years.
Okay. Senator Scoy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And could you just give me some framework to think about this? So you're a convenience store with an in-store deli. What's your current fee, and what would the fee be after this change?
Dr. Kassenberg?
Mr. Chair, Senator, members of the committee, the fee base right now for our structure for retail food handlers is based on gross sales. So it depends upon how much food that they sell on a retail basis. So it can range from $77 at the low end to a couple of $1,000s on the high end. So it depends upon how much they go through. And if this is a convenience store and they're selling gas, we do not count the gas in there. It's only on the food portion.
Okay. Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair, and so and what percentage increase would it be then? I mean, just some framework around it.
Dr. Kassenberg.
Mr. Chair, Senator, members of the committee, the answer to that question is 15%.
15%?
Yes, my understanding that would be the maximum would be raised. No one would get raised any more than 15%. If you paid the $77 or you paid a couple thousand, is that correct?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Senator Kalash, did you have a
question? I did. I'm just wondering, on these food inspections, because they're city health inspectors, et cetera, is this in coordination with them, or is this a separate just for the state, or is this dealing with all those areas of the state that don't have health inspectors in their cities?
Senator Kassenberg?
I mean, Dr. Kassenberg, I'm sorry, I wasn't invited.
Mr. Chairman.
You went from being to a potato girl, and now.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if I should be frightened or flattered, actually.
Out of promotion.
Mr. Chairman, we're not.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, members of the committee, the answer to that question is a little complex, because the food system in the whole United States, as well as Minnesota, is a little complex as far as regulation. But in Minnesota, if you consider, and I'll get to this a little more in detail when we talk about the dairy and food budget, is that Department of Ag has jurisdiction from the farm up to basically the table level. So all the way from dairy farms, feed processing, food processing, all the way up to a grocery store. Then we hand it off to the Department of Health at the restaurant and food service level. And so they have, or wherever it hits the plate is the restaurants. And then they take care of foodborne illness accounting, seeing how many illnesses there are in that. There is a little bit of an exception with our retail facilities. We have 8 local agencies that we delegate our retail authority to. And so that was what I was referencing in when we look, when we compare our fee structures. We are, for the most part, a lot lower than those delegated agencies. We delegated those, the department delegated those, or that authority to those agencies back in 2001, I believe.
Thank you.
So this would not, it would be for our own stat, our own licensees, not, it would not affect the local.
Just to follow up,
Senator Key Lash.
What, I guess part of what I'm getting at is that we're not doing them twice, one agency, local agency, and one state agency doing the same types of inspections.
Dr. Kassenberg?
Mr. Chair, Senator, members of the committee, no, those is completely separate.
Okay, thank you.
We don't, yep.
Yeah.
Senator Benson, do you have a question?
Yes. You said we're not inspecting enough based on statute. What do other states do for inspection? Where do we fit? Are we about middle? Do we inspect more? Do we inspect less? Let's try to justify an increase in FTEs based on some best practices.
Dr. Kassenberg?
Mr. Chair, Senator, members of the committee, these standards are actually based on what's called the Retail Food Code. And that is something that is put together by the Food and Drug Administration. And so that is what pretty much every state strives to do.
Okay. So it's nationwide. And okay. One more.
Senator Benson, Greg, maybe you want to.
I think, Mr.
Yeah,
Chair.
Yeah, just to go back a few years to
Senator,
talk about
Senator Benson, as I understand it, we adopt the federal standards, and that's what you're talking about is under the federal standard how often these are supposed to be. But actually, in statute, we don't have it spelled out. What we do is we adopt the federal standard for that
okay.
inspection.
That's fine. I'm just learning.
No,
and
that's
then
fine.
Do these costs, do you expect the retailers to absorb them, or would they go into the cost of the food consumers buy?
Dr. Kassenberg?
Mr. Chair, Senator, members of the committee, we would raise the fees for the retailers, and I imagine it would be up to the retailer to determine how that is absorbed within their own company.
Okay. Any further questions? You want to stop here today, Dr.?
Let's just find Mr. Chairman.
And, we'll finish the... We'll continue next week then, if that's all right with you members, and we'll go on to the next one. Thanks a lot for department for coming in and talking to us, and we'll see you next week. Thanks, everyone, for your participation in the meeting. We're adjourned.